Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, April 22nd, 2019, and we are reading from the Big Book. We are on page 21, the second full paragraph that begins, "Here is the fellow who has been puzzling you." Our readers today are Patty F. reading the 12 steps, Nan K. reading the 12 traditions, and reading the text are Leslie W., Susan H., and Kathleen O. Our share IDs for the recent meetings this morning, Monday, April 22nd at 7 a.m., the number is 12,800. And the share ID for Sunday's special edition, April 21st, the number is 12,808. Today, our newcomer greeter will be Ginger C., and giving our announcements will be Leslie W. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Patty F. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Hi, this is Patty F. in Massachusetts, a compulsive overeater. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thank you very much, Patty F. And I'll now ask Nan K. to read our 12 traditions.
Hi, I'm Nan K. from Northern Michigan, recovered compulsive overeater. Here are our 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An AOA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Nan Kay. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is six months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and when you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we will resume our study of the Big Book on page 21, the second full paragraph, and I will ask Leslie W. to get us started.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Leslie W. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. Here's the fellow who has been puzzling you, especially in his lack of control. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He is a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He is always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet let him drink for a day, and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. He is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor, but in that respect, he is incredibly dishonest and selfish. He often possesses special abilities, skills, and aptitudes, and has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook for his family and himself, and then pulls the structure down on his head by a senseless series of sprees. He is the fellow who goes to bed so intoxicated he ought to sleep the clock round, yet early the next morning he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. If he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over his house to be certain no one gets his entire supply away from him to throw down the waste pipe. As matters grow worse, he begins to use a combination of high-powered sedative and liquor to quiet his nerves so he could go to work. Then comes the day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. Perhaps he goes to a doctor who gives him morphine or some sedative with which to taper off. Then he begins to appear at hospitals and sanitariums. Okay, that's a lot to unpack. So, you know, I really identify with this paragraph not at first, but when I looked more closely, I could see he is a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Sorry if you guys hear that noise. It's my two wild and crazy boys. I really feel like when I was in the food, I could not maintain any consistency, especially with my personality. My husband never really knew what Leslie he was coming home to at the end of the day. If I felt good about myself, if I had a good food day, and I somehow beat the food one more day, you know, if I felt like I had been, quote, a good girl that day, then I would be nice. I would be kind. But then again, if I didn't, I would be angry at everybody and everything and full of self-pity and rage on the inside, anger, self-hate. You know, I really didn't understand what was happening to me, and I thought I could control it, and I really tried for a long time to control it. But I got to a point when all of my efforts just failed miserably, and I realized that no matter what I did or what I said I was going to do, when it came to the food, I just couldn't do it. You know, I didn't have that control that other people seem to have around it. And I did have gifts and abilities in other areas of my life, which made it all the harder to understand, why can't I lick this food thing? What's the matter with me? I would hide my food in drawers in my bedroom. I would even take jars of peanut butter with me whenever I travel places. Like, it was really bad. I would stop off at the grocery store and eat cupcakes and hide it in the big trash can outside of my house so that my husband wouldn't know that I was doing that. And, you know, I really can relate to this, and I would also use caffeine and other things to kind of pep myself up, because what the food did for me was numb me. And I think I'm going to have to pass because my four-year-old's about to break the door down. Thanks so much for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Leslie, for getting us started today. Okay. Who would like to share on what was just read?
Nicole C.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't get either name. One at a time.
Nicole C.
Nicole C.
Rowena K.
Rowena K.
Allie A.
Alyssa
S.
K. Allie A. What's your last initial, Allie A?
S. It's S.
S. Okay, thank you. And who was after Allie? Melissa C. Right, got you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Beatrice O.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll start with this group. So I have Nicole C., Rowena A., Alea S., Melissa C., and Beatrice O. And who just spoke up? Okay, let's start with Nicole C. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Nicole C. from Morgan Hill, California. I loved what we read this morning, and I really identified with our first reader. Thank you so much for what you shared. And I just relate so much to having so many special skills and abilities except for with the food. I mean, people that I love, that are close with me, people that I work with have often told me and still tell me, you're so gifted with this and you're so talented with that and you're such a go-getter and you just don't seem like you have anything that can keep you down. And I believe that's true with most of us, right? We have a will that is just so strong. And it doesn't matter if I'm in tears from the food. It doesn't matter if I'm looking at myself in the mirror, hating myself. That is not sufficient enough to get me to not eat it, which is the most devastating part, right? Which is the very thing that helped me to surrender, to bring me in here. My poor husband had to live with all these different rages and untreated, you know, oh my God, I am such a compulsive eater, and he had to pay the price. Whether I'm actively eating or not, if I'm not treating my compulsive overeating, he has to pay the price. Everyone around me has to pay the price. Because just like what was shared, if I was a quote-unquote good girl today and I did what I was supposed to do with the food, then people get loved. People get the nice me. People get the good me, because I'm happy with me, so I'm happy with you. But if I didn't do the thing I was supposed to do, it doesn't matter how much I try to cut myself a break. I not only hate me, but I hate everybody around me, because I can't possibly love anyone around me when I'm hating myself. And today, I don't have to live like that. There is a way out. I pass.
Thank you very much, Nicole C. Rowena K., please share with us.
Hi there. This is Rowena K. from the United Kingdom. Grateful, recovering, compulsive Rita. This paragraph resonates because I identify with it because I'm, you know, insanely... I'm insane when I'm sober as well, probably just slightly less so, but I don't need to drink or eat food to be insane. And what I also relate to in this is it's just the chaos. You know, he hasn't got a program or he hasn't got a solution here. And I also like where it says he's often perfectly sensible, well-balanced, except when it comes to liquor. He is incredibly dishonest and selfish. And that's me, even without liquor. So when I've got a resentment, you know, those are the things I'm looking at, my dishonesty and my selfishness. And so, you know, when I put down alcohol or food, I just become more aware of the dishonesty and the selfishness. And today, you know, the only way I've got of staying out of that place is by connecting with fellows and being on the meeting. You know, today I changed the way I feel by calling a fellow, doing the steps. You know, my first thought isn't about food anymore. It's about how I can use the program to solve my life. And 'cause that is actually what happens. I'm learning that... I, you know, when I've got problems or you know, I'm dealing with things, it's the best thing for me to do is to work my program even harder, because somehow things that seem so enormous become right-sized when I'm working this program. Yeah, and I'm really grateful at the moment today to be able to share on a meeting because it's Easter and it's just my way of staying out of isolation because my disease tells me, you know, don't speak, don't call people, just stay, you know, in a dark room and you'll be fine. And that, I never will, you know, so thank you and I pass.
Thank you very much, Rowena K. Aliyah S., sorry, I'm learning your name. Please share with us.
Hey, no problem. You're saying it, pronouncing it great.
Okay. Please share.
Yeah, hi, my name's Aliyah. I'm a compulsive overeater and a recovering drug addict and alcoholic. And this speaks so much to me because I remember that there was like a time where I was a hard eater, but I wasn't like a secretive compulsive eater yet. And a little bit about my story. I'm transgender, so I was born in the wrong body, and I remember being depressed in the wrong body, didn't know what to do about it, and at that point, my overeating was compulsive, and instead of going to therapy or talking with someone, I just hid out and went into addiction. And I remember that my mom used to come into my room, and I used to scream at her, like, go away, I hate you. Like, I was mean. I was disgustingly mean and ugly to her, and today I'm really sorry for that. But it was all the food and the sugar, and I was just enraged. But the rage was against me, because I was like, why? I hated myself. Why am I in this stupid addiction? And as I used to be still a hard eater as a teenager, I was like gifted. I drew a lot. I had ideas. And over the years, like all those talents, they vanished more and more and more until I just recently realized, oh my God, I'm just an outer shell. I'm empty. Like all I have inside is the compulsive overeating left. And I don't know who I am anymore. So yeah, I can really relate to this text a lot. And also the turning up at the sanitariums, because I was drinking, I was binging, and I was isolating. I was just like in a whole big mess, and I started going to these places, hoping that they could solve that. I need just pills. I'm depressed. It never worked. And yeah, to me, it's also when it's written that in the morning he searches madly for the bottle. Well, I didn't search for the bottle, but if there was a little bit left of compulsive food, I had to eat it, and it had to be another day of compulsive overeating and isolation. And sometimes I never left the house. I just ordered food in, which was very expensive, but I had to eat that remaining food. If there was, and I remember it was so hardcore, like when there was still something remaining, I couldn't just start a new day. The food had to be killed. And yeah, now I'm back in the OA program. And I'm working it. I'm ready to go to any length, because I just reached that hard bottom when I realized, that rock bottom, when I realized, oh my God, like I'm about to get my gender surgery. I'm about to be able to do all I want and about to live my life and my dreams, but I'm still in bed and I'm still compulsively overeating. I have no friends and I just hate my life. So what is wrong? And that's when I finally could surrender. Like I guess that's my time. Thank you so much for listening. And yeah, I pass.
Thank you very much, Aaliyah S. Melissa C., please share with us.
Hi, good morning, Kathy. Thank you so much for your service. It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. And, you know, I think about like that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and being too different people, you know. And for me, it was when I was eating and when I wasn't eating, I was still wildly unpredictable. And you know, I kind of for years like really prided myself and would compliment my daughter for being so self-sufficient. Like she was just this. I would tell people how at, you know, 6 years old, she was making her own school lunches. What a great little girl she was. And, you know, it sort of came to my attention recently. She did this out of necessity, you know, and the rest of the world got a picture of this mom for the outside that was very different from the mom at home. You know, my kids had to make their own breakfast and lunch because I couldn't function. Because I was in a stupor, a food stupor. And yet, you know, the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde that I was a Girl Scout leader. You know, I baked the best treats for the PTA. I did, like, the best class birthday parties ever, but had nothing left for my family. And that was what this disease did, you know, to me and hence my family. And, you know, the other thing is that antisocial, you know, food is a very social activity, eating and food for normal people. Normal people, you know, get together and there's this social component around food. And for me, I could be in a room with hundreds of people, and if I am eating, the only thing in the room now is the food. And so I've been in places, you know, wonderful social events, and I had minimal conversations. You know, the only thing I could focus on was the bread basket on the table. And I've done that abstinent, and I've done that while eating, you know. And the only thing that relieved me from that was a spiritual solution where, you know, we can show up today. I can show up today and be present at family functions, eating my lovely, small, simple plate, and allow other people to have the social experience around the food, and I actually get to enjoy people. And that is just mind-blowing, you know, to come through holiday weekends where I was socially present and the authentic me, not a phony but real, is just a beautiful gift. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Melissa C. And Beatrice O., please share with us. Press star one.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Beatrice O. I'm from Northern California, Los Gatos. And so this is a very powerful paragraph about lack of control and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They say, you know, I've heard it said in meetings, if a horse thief stops drinking, guess what? He's still a horse thief. And so I think that's what these steps are about. They're about a cleansing, a spiritual cleansing, a spiritual awakening. There are many times in my life before I ever got to OA that I stopped compulsively eating. I was on diets and amphetamines and whites and, you know, cigarettes and coffee. And when I wasn't doing that, I was obsessively, compulsively working. And I was insane. And during that time, you know, I was married to an alcoholic. So he was drinking and I was eating. Both of us were in oblivion and we were raising two kids. I remember going to the Langendorf warehouse bakery where they used to bake all the baked goods, and I would go over there and get leftover baked goods at a cheap price, and I would tell myself they were for my kids' luncheons, and I'd come home and eat them all. Another thing I used to do is I used to rent lots of movies and stop at Langendorf and get all my binge foods and draw the curtains, and I would eat all weekend. And then on Sundays, I would get a lot of laxatives, and then I'd, you know, shit my brains out so I can get to work in the morning, and then act like I'm just one among many. Happy family with all these secrets at home. Anyway, so my sponsor told me, you know, this program is about a spiritual awakening. And the steps help us get to that spiritual awakening, and it's about God. And I'll just read this sentence and I'll be quiet. It says, actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship, or other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and the miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup. Anyway, I could go on, but for me, that is my spiritual awakening. I was in deep denial about my food, about my life, about my mind. And that's the only reason I have a reprieve today is because my higher power. So thank you for letting me share, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Beatrice O. Okay, I'm going to take some more names. Who would like to share?
I didn't hear my name called. It was
What's
Roz.
Your name?
Roz R. Was my infant tail end?
Oh, I didn't hear you, Roz. Okay, I got you now.
Julie E.B.?
Julie E.B.
Pam M.
Pam M.
Deborah G.
Deborah G, was it?
Yes.
Thank you. And how about one more? Anybody else want to share?
Madge C.
Say your name again, please.
Oh, Madge C.
Madge C. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, Roz, please share with us.
Okay, thank you. Can I be heard?
You can.
Okay, thank you. Let me just set my timer. I'm Roz R., and I'm recovered in Florida. And I don't share that often, but, oh, my God, this set paragraph is like, if I ever doubted, which I haven't in many years, that I was a real compulsive overeater, that paragraph, like, was me. And I, you know, it's funny, I haven't thought about that in years, about what I used to do, because I stopped hiding food and sneaking food long ago, but when I thought about, when I was hearing people share, and I was realizing, like, oh my God, I was married twice, two long marriages. I divorced both husbands, but I was in this disease, even though I was thin, I was insane, because I never knew if I had a bad food day, and a bad food day could have just been volume eating, you know, healthy food, but I mean, my whole life revolved around what I weighed, what I looked like, what food I ate, what food I didn't eat. You know, it was horrifying, and I forget how much I lived like that till I heard that this reading today. I mean, I had no life, I came in 1982. That's like what 35, 36 years ago. And I was in a treatment center, and that did no good. I was kept there for 7 weeks instead of four of my non-compliancy. And I mean, I've tried everything. It never occurred to me until 2016 when I really plunked myself into the vision meeting, got myself through the steps, got recovered. Like, it never occurred to me, oh, how simple it is. I need to do the steps and forget about everything else. And, you know, there's a slogan that I heard that I love. You know, if you focus on recovery, you lose the weight and you lose all the insanity too. But if you focus on your weight, you lose recovery. And that was my problem. I was always focused on my weight. And now I am so blessed because it's been since 2016 that I have not done that way, you know, have practiced that way of living. And I just... I mean, my God, I remembered one time I had lived in an apartment complex and there was this community dumpster. I mean, that's a community dumpster. When you throw something in a community dumpster, you know how big that is? You have to, like, have to fall into it to get anything out. And I remember one of my last horrendous binges, throwing all my stuff in the community thing. And then, you know, when that full feeling goes away, you have the, you know, like you could just fit a little bit more food in. And I actually went in the dark with a flashlight, dipped my body halfway into that community dumpster, got that food out and ate it. And I mean, only other people like me would understand because there's so much shame attached to this disease. And I grew up with all obese women. So I was brought up with shame. I know my time is up, but the powerful paragraph, and I'm so glad I'm not alone, and I'm so glad I'm in recovery. Okay, thank you so much, and thanks for your service, and I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Roz R. Julie Epi, please share with us.
Hi, this is Julie Epi, gratefully recovered today, and I need to share kind of fast on this paragraph, but I just had to read. I really have a strong belief that if there is any occasion upon which I let this in, the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, this is where my disease thinking really takes off. Anytime I'm pretending to be okay, I'm over-functioning, I'm acting perfect at work, in my relationships at home, anytime that I'm doing this, anytime I'm letting that disease in. And so it's one thing to look back and see, yes, I was Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. It's another thing to see on a daily basis. Every time I talk to one of you and say, hey, I'm perfect, I'm okay, I'm wonderful, I'm super recovered, I'm letting that disease inside the Mr. Hyde, I'm just letting it grow. So that's what I wanted to say today, and thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Pam M., please share with us.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for your service. liquor concealed all over the house. Yeah, you know, I had, you know, food in my car, food down in my basement, food wherever I could reach it. And I did a lot of concealing, you know, walking into another room with no one looking while I could stuff the food into my face quickly. You know, and pretending that it didn't count. And I would overeat to, you know, proportions of getting, you know, so sick and so ill. I couldn't eat anymore, but I couldn't stop. Perhaps he goes to a doctor who gives him morphine or some sedative with which to taper off. You know, I was on every antacid that you could. I gave myself chronic pancreatitis because, I mean, I was hospitalized multiple times because I just couldn't stop eating. And, you know, acute pancreatitis wasn't enough for me to learn from this. I had to go ahead and give myself chronic pancreatitis, you know, and go through, you know, crazy periods of not eating for months at a time and juice fast and this and that to try to keep myself, fix myself quickly so I could continue to binge and eat in monumental proportions. You know, so yeah, then he begins to appear in hospitals. And, yeah, you know, I was in hospitals. They didn't know what else to do for me. You know, and finally I was grateful enough to recognize that, you know, OA is in existence, that this is a problem. And, you know, and yeah, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in front of everyone, I'm, you know, holier than thou. You know, I've got it all figured out, and I'm a great, you know, teacher of peace and spiritual leader. And behind closed doors, I was binging my brains out and hating myself. And, you know, I'm so grateful for this program. I'm finally getting it. I don't have to be perfect. My higher power loves me the way that I am, and I don't have to eat over it, and I can feel the uncomfortable feelings, and I can, instead of eating, I can pray, I can meditate, I can connect to my higher power, I can connect to my fellows, and I'm so very grateful. So with that, I pass.
Thanks very much, Pam. Deborah G., please share with us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deborah, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you for your service work, everyone, and all the shares that I've shared. Thank you for 12-stepping me today. And I can so relate to so many things. And, you know, it's just the food which just kept me away from God, kept me away from people, and kept me away from myself. You know, I was not really spiritually connected to God. There was a piece missing there, and that was the food that was, you know, the fog, the disconnected heart. And then the, you know, putting the sugar in my body, the mind, you know, I would turn into reacting. It was like putting water and fertilizer on my defects of character, you know, huge self-centeredness and huge resentments and reacting and judging, and then the mental obsession. You know, when I'm with someone eating, I'm thinking about the food. When I'm with a group of people, I'm thinking about the food. I'm at an event, thinking about the food and protecting the food, going out and taking the food into the parking lot, eating the food in the parking lot so nobody would see how much food I would eat, and also stealing away from others, because like a potluck or something, that was some other people could be eating at that selfish self-centeredness. So, yeah, and just, you know, and watching myself sometimes, I would get glimpses. Why did I do that? Or why did I say that? You know, I was in the throes of this disease that caught, and then it would like shortly go away and I'd be back into doing it again and again and again. And my saving grace that was said was going through the steps, putting down the food, going to the meetings keep treating my head, you know, talking to a sponsor, being accountable, getting structure. Because I was all an addict, I was all over the place. And then through all that, I was able to find God again and find all of you again and find myself. And it's an ongoing process. It's progress, not perfection. And I'm going to keep coming back because I don't want to go back and live. I don't ever want to live like I lived before. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Deborah G. Madge C., please share with us.
Good morning, everybody. This is Mag C. from Denver. And, yeah, a bright outlook pulled down by liquor, or in our case, food. You know, for me, this is a body, mind, soul disease, and it starts with the words, I am not enough as I am. And for me, you know, part of that is my body has betrayed me completely. And so even from an early childhood age, I was had this certainty that I was a bad person and I could not trust myself and I would never be able to make up for it. And all of that is that childhood thinking that's such a lie. But I didn't have the tools back then to understand what was going on, and I did come from an abusive situation. But to overcome this, I became like, and this is doing this without help, I became overly responsible, overly achieving. I was desperate to find some peace, and I was only peaceful and I only felt safe when I was excelling. And I would trivialize any accolades or any accomplishments that I got, and I would blow up all of my mistakes and flagellate myself with that cat of nine tails and see how it is, you know, and not acknowledge that, you know, this body's doing the best it can. And I kept this torturous, tight control of the size of my body for most of my life. I was largely anorexic, restricting through college, and then I learned about bulimia. I went through two marriages, puking, you know, puking and pooping and hiding and sneaking and on a daily basis and going back and making, because I've made previous amends to those people that I didn't know, or I chose people who didn't choose to know. And I exercised this whole time. I was breaking my bone in my feet, and I didn't recover. I didn't fuse from my spinal surgeries twice. And now with just long-term osteoarthritis, you know, from all of that. And now I'm at a weight that is comfortable, that is not skinny by any means, but being a size 12 to me is like the epitome of health. When I can get my mind peace and safe, and when I can say to my body that you are good enough, in fact, you are the best. You're the best that I've got. And I love that. And I will treat you right. And I will stop this crazy behavior. Now that is a miracle. And I could not do it without my higher power, which is this group, hearing these voices in this group, and knowing that that out there, there is this mystery of magic that absolutely is just the spirit of goodness and love. And it wants me to succeed. And so with that, that's all I've got. This is Mag C from Denver. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Mag C. Okay, we have time for two more shares. Would anyone like to take them?
Judith? Judith G?
Judith and Sue G. Judith, please tell me the first initial and go ahead and share.
Thank you. My last name starts with a G as in girl.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So this is Judith G, and I am recovered in Southern Utah. And it just occurred to me this morning as listening that I've been waiting to talk on the line until I had something to say. And this morning it occurred to me that that's what I have to say, is that something stops me from talking on a line. It's a fear that I won't say something that you want to hear, that I have to be something that you need or want me to be. I need your approval so desperately that it stops me from even like living my life or being around others or sharing myself completely. And the food was a solution for that. The food went on top of that. And when the food went away, then I had to face this part of me. And 12-step meetings, the face-to-face meetings, I learned to sit at the table and share and just say what was going on with me here and now. And as soon as I started doing that, the energy started coming back in my body. I could feel the flow. I feel it now. And then I've actually given some talks, which it just seems incredible to me, stand up in front of a group in a retreat. And I've learned that too. And this feels, I don't know if it's the final frontier, but I was just so blind to the idea the same thing was happening here on the phone. So I'm just thrilled to speak up and to tell my truth. So that's it. Thanks for letting me share. And this is Judith G. in Utah.
Thank you very much, Judith G. I guess there was no Sue G. I heard that wrong. We have time for one more share. Is there anyone who'd like to take it?
I'll jump in, Kathy Jo P.
Okay, Kathy Jo, please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. I don't even know what I'm going to say today, but God told me I needed to speak today. And I hid food in all kinds of ways. Sometimes it was eating tons of food in front of people and wanting them to believe that it didn't matter. And then at times it was in the rooms and getting in my food in an abstinent way, which was often concoctions or things that I shouldn't have been eating. And yes, I misbehaved all the time, and showed up in conflict with people. And thank God today, that is not where I am with the food, but where I am is still every day working on my behaviors and the things that come between me and God, whether it's a resentment, a fear, a judgment, selfishness, working on that every day so that I can stay connected to the power that helps me stay clean with food and be of service and stay connected to God. And I truly can tell you that I don't miss the food. And right now I'm facing some big health concerns and I'm on some medicine that's supposed to make me be more hungry. And right now I'm clinging to my abstinence and clinging to you people. And so far that's not happening for me. And I don't know if that will change, but if it does, I will keep on clinging to my abstinence and clinging to God and clinging to you all to help me get through this change, which might include long-term medication. But I feel freer than I've ever felt, and I feel very grateful as I face this challenge that I'm down 113 pounds and that when inflammatory foods are recommended for me to abstain from, I'm already there. But I'm willing, if I need to, even give up more because food is not my solution. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kathy Jo P.
Well, thank you, everyone who was here today,
those who shared and those who listened. It was a wonderful reminder of the elements that we must address every day in order to stay abstinent and in recovery. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Susan H., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Hi, this is Susan H. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Ohio. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do for each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, losing my voice, excuse me. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.